Welcome to the Sunstone Podcast, everyone, where there's always more than one way to Mormon. I'm Stephen Carter, and I'll be introducing this episode. But first, something really interesting happened at the 2023 Summer Symposium. The two most popular sessions were Why I Stay and Spiritual Paths of the September 6, 30 years later. And I noticed that both sessions were attended by basically the same crowd of people. And this made me realize that one of the most important things about Sunstone is its long-standing community, one that supports the spiritual seeker at every point in their journey. For example, at this last year's symposium, some sessions were presented by students who have just entered the world of Mormon studies, and others were by people who were midway through their journeys. You know, like the panelists in Why We Stay were all in their 40s and 50s. And there were some who have traveled long and far, such as the September 6 and their contemporaries, many of whom are in their 60s and 70s. I was especially affected to see Elbert Peck at the helm of the September 6 session. He was Sunstone's executive director in 1993 and provided crucial leadership during that time. And now, he was back, helping the audience to process the trauma of September 1993. And that's the deep value of Sunstone's enduring community. It's a place where we can mourn with those who mourn and comfort those who stand in need of comfort through all phases of each other's journeys. And as the September 6th session showed, even after 30 years, we can still come back together and help each other heal. So, 2024 will mark Sunstone's 50th anniversary. 50 years of providing an essential community that really only gains healing power as time progresses. And for all 50 years, Sunstone has run solely on donations. You know, we make enough on symposium registration fees and magazine subscriptions to cover their costs, but everything else, the rent, the electricity, server fees, insurance, all the behind-the-scenes stuff, it comes from donations. Thanks for being part of this community. Thanks for being a vital part of its past. And thanks for helping it reach into the future. Visit sunstone.org/donate. And while you're there, grab our commemorative Provo Temple farewell t-shirt at sunstone.org/ugly sweater. You don't want the Mothership Temple to blast off to Kolob without a heartfelt goodbye, do you? So when I first came on as Sunstone's editor, one of our best personal essayists, Dana Haight Katani, was struggling with cancer. And along the way, she wrote some extraordinary personal essays that she kindly let me publish. This is one of the first ones. It's called His Eye is on the Sparrow. Hear the telltale thump. Walking to the window, I confirm what I already suspect. In spite of our decals and shiny reflector tape, another sparrow has flown into one of the panes along the backside of our house and fallen to the deck below. In vain, I watch the tiny brown body for signs of life. A few hours later, I get the shovel and carry its rigid form out to the woods. Each spring, sparrows nest in birdhouses I've nailed to a post in my yard. Chickadees try to move in on the sparrows. Jays torment them. Raccoons and opossums rob them. And falcons patrol the skies like tufts. But every year, the sparrows rebuild, laying and fostering life. We know when the eggs hatch, because the house vibrates with sound. The birds have three distinct cries. Jigga-jigga when they're agitated, chirv in flight, and chirp, just because the dogwoods are in full bloom, or the blackberry bushes are humming with bees, or the cerulean skies beckon. Carrying the small corpse on my shovel blade, like a waiter serving the sacrificial gods of this earth, I think the sparrows' lives may be equal parts terror, exasperation, and joy. Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing? And one of them shall not fall on the ground without your father. Matthew 10:29. April 2012. I awaken in the hospital in Indianapolis with a 10-inch suture across my belly. While I was sleeping, my laparoscopic hysterectomy turned into major abdominal surgery, revealing advanced endometrial cancer. 1 week, I'm a healthy 46-year-old woman, a writer, a basketball and tennis player, a wife, and the mother of three teenagers. The next, I'm a hapless, helpless version of myself, trapped in a morphine-induced haze and waiting for the doctor to bring me a different pathology report, one that tells me I'll be good as new in 6 weeks. Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? John 9:2. May 2012, at home in Bloomington. I lie in bed, memorizing the wood grain in the ceiling fan. It's five paddles and asterisks, as if an explanation might be found nearby. For weeks and weeks, I waken in the morning, and often in the night, inconsolable. Over and over again, I walk the same circuitous path of disbelief, sorrow, and fear. Then, one day, I wake up and realize that I don't have to keep getting lost in the same thicket. I know I have cancer. I knew it yesterday. I knew it last week. I knew it last month. I don't have to wake up every morning and start grieving from scratch. I can pick up where I left off, an inch forward. Jesus saith to the man, "Stretch forth thine hand." And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored whole as the other. Mark 3:5. May 2012, the night before the first of six chemotherapy infusions, I call my mother in California. For the past 12 years, she's been an ovarian cancer patient. She knows the drill. Perhaps more to the point, she stood between danger and me my entire childhood, ready to stiff-arm anyone or anything that posed a threat to my safety and well-being. Cue that mother. This is her moment. With studied calmness, I say, "I'm having my first treatment tomorrow." "That's good, dear," my mother replies. "I'm sure it will be fine." I want to say, "I don't expect you to solve this problem or make it go away, but I would really like you to be present with me right now." But I don't. She's too far away to help and too ill to travel. This is not her moment. It's mine. After the treatment, my mother calls. "Bring in palliative care," I say. "I can't do this five more times." "You'll get tougher," she says softly. "Wilt thou be made whole? Rise up, take thy bed, and walk." John 5, 6, and 8. July 2012. The last time I see my mother alive, I wash her feet. I have no alabaster box of ointment and, fresh from chemo, no hair on my head to dry them with, but I do have some peppermint-scented lotion and a hand towel. My mother's feet are misshapen with bunions. Her toes are stiff with arthritis. Her nail beds discolored and warped from her own chemo. And yet, how beautiful are the feet. With my thumbs, I rub the lotion in swirling patterns until her feet are soft and smell like Christmas. It is what I needed most to do for her before she died. And behold, a woman, which was diseased with an issue of blood 12 years, came behind Jesus and touched the hem of his garment. He said, "Daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole." And the woman was made whole from that hour. Matthew 9, 20 and 22. August 2012. A CT scan and biopsy reveal a recurrent tumor in my abdomen. My cancer is legion, for it is many indeed. I have a second surgery. My family holds a fast. My dear home teacher gives me a blessing. My neighbor tells me that her dinner gets cold every night as she prays for me. Mormon, Catholic, Protestant, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, and even agnostic friends tell me they're praying for me. A fellow cross-country parent raises my name in her prayer circle. A friend who visits a medieval cathedral in France lights a candle there for me. Then came the disciples to Jesus apart and said, "Why could we not cast him out?" And Jesus said unto them, "Because of your unbelief. This kind goeth not out but by prayer and fasting." Matthew 17:19-21. September 2012. I never drive myself to Radiation. For 28 days, friends and neighbors provide rides to each appointment so that I'll have a companion and advocate. Even so, every time the technicians close the 6-inch thick metal door and leave me in the vault alone, nearly naked, I experience a wave of profound loneliness and vulnerability. What is flesh against the searing beams of radiation? The machine whirs, clicks, and buzzes through its 6 different positions, a soundtrack for nightmares. And behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, "Lord, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean." And Jesus put forth his hand and touched him, saying, "I will, be thou clean." And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. Matthew 8:2-3. October 2012. I can't attend my mother's burial. I'm 19 days into radiation. Though my doctor allows me to postpone one Friday treatment to go to California for the funeral, he tells me to report as usual the following Monday morning. My mother will be buried in Utah on Monday afternoon. On the day of the interment, I attend my 8 a.m. appointment. Then I go home, climb into bed, and pull the covers over my head. All day, rain splashes against my bedroom window. Then Jesus answered and said unto her, "O woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt." And her daughter was made whole from that very hour. Matthew 15:28. February 2013. In the produce department of the grocery store, I run into an acquaintance. "I heard you were sick," she says. "Fortunately, God never gives us more than we can handle." It has been an extended season of losses. Uterus, fallopian tubes, ovaries, hormones, appendix, hair, 58 lymph nodes, 6 inches of bowel, 15 pounds, 18% of the bone density in my lower spine and hips, a robust immune system, future plans, my family's peace of mind, my mother. I nod, smile wanly, and busy myself choosing between Granny Smith's and Fuji's. And Jesus said to the centurion, "Go thy way, and as thou hast believed, so be it done unto thee." And his servant was healed in the selfsame hour. Matthew 8:13. January 2014. I love Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Aside from crazy Genesis, the Gospels are my favorite book of Scripture, with their Word made flesh wandering the desert, healing people of their sins and ailments. Fevers break, severed ears are reattached, demons depart into swine and run off cliffs, and a widow's only son is restored to life. Suffering is cause enough for relief, and compassion flows freely. Yet, again and again, Jesus tells the healed, "Thy faith hath made thee whole," as if they themselves have wrought the miracles. But generating your own miracles is harder than it looks. News can be bad and get worse. Some suffering can be eased. Some cannot. Treatments work, or they work for a while, or they do not work at all, but still cause horrific side effects. The faith and prayers of entire communities cannot reliably call down the gifts of healing or life. Although I believe that communities can bring the gifts of empathy, companionship, and even lasagna, I trip over blessings every day my path is so strewn with them. Still, in peevish moments, I wish those blessings were more comprehensive and immediate, arriving with an ironclad guarantee. And Jesus took the blind man by the hand and led him out of town. And when he had spit on his eyes and put his hands on him, he asked him if he saw aught. And he looked up and said, "I see men as trees walking." After that, he put his hands again upon his eyes and made him look up. And he was restored and saw every man clearly. Mark 8:23-25. This miracle stands alone in its depiction of healing as a multi-staged process. Jesus repeats a protocol, touching the eyes, sometimes with spittle, that has healed others of blindness. When he checks his work, the formerly blind man reports that he can make out human forms, but that they look like trees. Jesus lays his hands upon the man again, and after this second attempt, his vision is clear and fully restored. What if this story had ended with the man able to discern light from dark and make out tree-like shapes, but not recognize people's faces? What if the lepers had been healed, but left with disfiguring scars that carried their own stigma? What if the father who cried out with tears, "Lord, I believe, help thou mine unbelief," had been told that, according to his faith, his son would be healed gradually over the next 3 to 5 years? Would these stories be included in the Gospels? Some fixes are slow. Some are partial. Some are not fixes at all, but rather brief respites, if that. I do not know why, nor am I inclined to fuss about it. At this moment in my life, I'm not particularly comforted by theodicy, or philosophy, or doctrine, just kindness, and certain images, just baby birds chirping and singing out their distress, or hunger, or sense of awe, until their house shakes with the ruckus, the hearts in their warm little bodies vibrating together. Like the sparrows, I am biologically disposed to rebuild, to discount long odds, to trust the goodness of this world. Well, short and sweet. Well, not sweet, I guess, but good. Thanks for joining me for this week's episode of the Sunstone Podcast. And if you appreciate our work here, stop by sunstone.org/donate. I'll talk with you next episode.